House Resource Committee will come to order.
Representative Barnes, Representative Baskin, Representative Sutcliffe, and Representative Fanning are present. I would like to announce for the information of the committee that the coal reclamation bill will be heard in the Senate Resources tomorrow at 1:30. And off at 1:30. And that all House members of this Resource Committee are invited to attend. There will be several industry representatives and also the DNR folks giving their presentation there. And as a result of that, to avoid duplication, we're not going to do it in this Resource Committee and then that one. So we're going to deal with it in the Senate side first. So we'd urge members of this 56-page bill to become familiar with it as the experts testify there tomorrow beginning at 1:30. I guess the first item on the agenda today is...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to have to walk away for a few minutes. Did you want to pass this bill out or something right away?
Have you seen it?
Yes. This is the one we had testimony on the other day.
And then you've had a committee substitute.
Yes.
The subject before us is committee substitute for House Bill 811, and that's the subject we're going to bring up. I haven't. Have you had a chance to look at it?
Yes,
that's
good.
Okay.
I was here about 15 minutes ago. Yes.
Could we have Representative Gardner? Could you quickly?
I had somebody talk to me today too.
Mr. Chairman, quickly, I tried to talk to some of the committee members before the meeting. I think the bill clears up most of the problems that were brought up in the committee and maybe some others that were discovered a little later after the department. But it's a lot clearer the way it's written. It basically accomplishes the same intent of limiting it to the existing landowners or existing pieces of property there that are either owned by people who built them or sold to them. And it relates now to using the phrase the former timber sale contractor, so it's tied in and it requires occupancy for 90 days, but they had to have either built that or purchased it from the timber sale contractor, which I think pretty well limits it to the situation we're talking about. And there's one new section clear on the end of the bill, page 2, line 7, where it says the director may adjust the boundaries of the lots. One of the problems that was not discussed, I don't think in the committee, maybe it was, that came up is that it was never a real good survey or platting of the property in the first place, because it was just, you know, the company had a lease in the property and put up a bunch of homes. So there may be necessity to straighten out all the boundaries of the property before they transfer the ownership of that property. So this would give the director the authority to do it. But it does contain what the department recommended in that the language that was in the similar Type 4 service lease, that the director shall first offer it to the occupant or successor in interest, which includes somebody who might have bought it. So it parallels the original thing. I think the one comment Mr. Carney brought up was, well, could we redraft the other existing section of Forest Service lease to just add this in? I think with the other problems that came up, we'll not be able to do this. And I did run this by Representative Carney, although he told me I wouldn't be here. He said he didn't have much problem, because his original intent was he just thought that maybe we could have general legislation that would solve all these kinds of problems. But that was his concern.
President Gardner, it does look like it meets a lot of the concerns that were discussed yesterday or last time we had this before. So it would apply not just to the specific situation in Thornbend. Is that correct?
Right. That's correct. Anything that would meet these same conditions are fairly narrow, because it would have to be a timber sale contractor and the Forest Service timber sale contract. So it would involve any similar type of situations in the national forest that had these conditions where there was actually homes and people had built or owned them.
Major changes seem to be that addition that you talked about that's handwritten on page 2, and also the change to 90 days on occupancy.
Right. Because that now it more clearly covers both those people who are original owners and those people who are getting sold the houses at this time. And then I think also down in subsection C, they dropped out the one phrase there on the, this is the, had the, the residents of a community nature phrase, the drafters felt that that wasn't necessary, although it appears in the existing law. I guess there's some question about what that really was.
Right. So, I didn't know that, and also the recreational stuff.
So they drafting recommended deleting that.
Represent a separate.
Yeah. When it says to the, before the relinquishment of the land by the timber sale contractor, when does the relinquishment of the land occur? I mean, is it all of a sudden they sign a piece of paper and they relinquish the land?
Yeah, it's a pretty simple process. The meetings we had before with the Louisiana Pacific and the Forest Service, that's basically it. They basically write them a letter. It's not a no hearing process or anything like that, because it's already sort of preconditioned in the lease contract that they have with the Forest Service. Now, Forest Service has the ability to make, there are certain stipulations, one, like they could require them to clean it all up. Now, Forest Service says, well, you know, as long as these things are, if with the plan that everybody's proposing to happen here, they're not going to make that requirement. So, in that sense, the Forest Service, it's when the Forest Service accepts that. But the company would write and say, we don't need it any longer, we hereby relinquish it. But the Forest Service would have to accept it. So I guess that decision point would be when the Forest Service accepted that, because they could conceivably come back and say, well, you have to clean this up, or other stipulations that they had in the lease. But they have, you know, they're fully aware and informed about this and supportive of it. They're not going to require that if this goes through.
So the bids that occurred here last, or opened today, the relinquishment of the land will not occur for at least 90 days from now. So those people, like the guy that had the trailer that wanted to move into the house, now he's going to be accommodated. So that, I mean, we're certain that those that have bid on the house, one, will have the ability to move into the house and fulfill the requirements, or are we going to end up maybe, will the guy even be able to move into the house before he buys it?
Well, he could move into it any time, but your question is like, what if they relinquish the land in 60 days, then would the guy get cut out?
Well, those that won the bid, but also, are there people living in the houses now that don't want to buy it, didn't bid on it, and then the guy that's living in the trailer bids on the house, can't take it until he pays for it. I'm just wondering, will that those people that won the bids be insured of being able to live in there 90 days prior to the relinquishment of the land?
Well, I don't think there should be a problem in that the company actually owns those ones that are up on bid, so they, I'm not quite sure. Are you saying that what if the existing resident doesn't move out and he can't move in? I think in most of the ones, I'm not sure. I don't think there's any residents in the ones that they're selling. They're empty. I think they're empty. See, one of the things is that the camp has, you know, reduced its workforce over the last year or two, when there's been sort of poor economic straits for the timber industry. So I think the ones they're actually auctioning off were the ones that are owned by a company that are not built. Company had built some new ones up on top of the hill. And these are the older homes that were original homes from original camp. So I don't think it should be a problem with moving in.
Okay, that's fine. As long as the company lets them live in there prior to, because until they get title to the land, they can't buy the land, so unless they live in there for 90 days,
right,
it will have to occur before they own the land, that the KL, whatever the thing, the name of that group is going to have to let them live in there for 90 days in order to...
See, I think that one company is interested in having that happen, because otherwise the Forest Service can require them to clean it up.
As long as they're aware of the building.
They could require them to go in and level the ground and return it to a natural state according to their lease. So this will help them avoid that. They would just assume it's to their advantage to get with
it. I guess something new has come out here that I wasn't aware of. I kind of thought, not that it makes a difference big difference. I thought what we're doing was, in fact, trying to get land and homes to people who were living in them and who had for 25 years. Now you're telling me that all these places that we're dealing with are in fact empty?
No, not most of them aren't. There are some in that status. And
In which status?
That the company owns that they were like renting to people. People may have lived there a long time and that they may have been renting or owned. So there's, I think the majority of them are owned by the people who live there. There are some other ones in the lower part of the camp, which is the area in question, that are not, that the company is putting up for bid. But those people are people who are living in Thorn Bay already someplace else.
I see that we have a legislative drafter in the office, in the committee room, which is a scary thing, so that must mean that there's either some problems in the bill or he's going to explain to us that everything is perfect.
Chairman, I thought maybe that knowing the difficulty of these land bills, and that was the first thing I said in my testimony yesterday, and just having gone through it with the previous bill and other lands bills, that if there was some questions that came up from the committee, it maybe would be easier. Mr. Bradley worked on it, we could solve them now and the committee could pass it out if there was a problem.
All right.
So,
I would,
as far as I know,
I would like to ask a question that may, and then ask Mr. Bradley to comment. The one thing that was kind of confusing to some of us yesterday was the fact that timber sale contract, that one specifically, was going on until the year 2004. And the contract, of course, was for cutting timber, not specifically for the use of the land, although that was included. I guess my question is, in line 11 it says, if land formerly subject to a United States Forest Service timber sale contract, it seems to me that the land in Thorn Bay does not fall in that condition, since it is still subject to a Forest Service timber sale contract as far as cutting goes, and will be until the year 2004. So the contract will always remain. I guess my question is to the fact, when you say subject to, if the land, that specific land,
you're talking about that specific land, the land that's is under the improvements. That's the subject of the bill, the land under the improvements. And that land, at some point, will not be subject to the timber sale contract. I may say that as I listen to Representative Gardner's testimony, it strikes me that you may need an immediate effective date clause to the bill. If you've got to wait 180 days, 90 days plus 90 days, then you've got a problem, potentially.
In other words, you don't think in line 11 it would be more appropriate to read if land subject to or formerly subject to?
Well, the reason why I say formally subject to is that the Division of Lands acquires no authority to come in and do anything until the land is formally subject to. So long as it is under the timber sale contract, the Division of Lands has no authority over it.
Is that correct, DNR?
That's true, we don't have administrative authority
until the contract is removed. Until the land is abandoned or until the timber sale contract?
No, until the land is relinquished.
And the timber sale contract, however, is still in effect, even though the land is relinquished. Is that not correct?
Yeah, the contract's in effect. I'm not sure if it's in effect.
No.
You still don't see
it? I see what you're saying, but I don't agree. Yes.
Well, that's fine. That's what I want. Then it's fine. With the exception of an immediate effective date clause,
that would be
you think that the bill is drafted is good, sound?
As I understand the problem.
Legally, don't dare try to explain that, what your understanding is, because we have five different understandings up here. Are there any other questions from committee members? I see Representative Cardin is joining us.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I have a whole list of questions about 12 here, but I thought I'd move that we both report to Bill out of committee.
Let's start with you.
No.
Chairman, yes, for the record, Representative Halford is also present.
That's unanimous consent.
Object. Object is for, I want to hear the...
Yeah, the DNR shakes its head, the DNR is afraid of this committee.
There's nothing to say.
There's a motion before us to move the bill out of committee. There's an objection. Is the objection maintained?
Discussion.
You want 5 minutes?
The DNR said it was okay? DNR shakes their head like, I assume that meant the DNR did not care to testify.
We don't have, no, I'm just here for questions.
Is the objection maintained?
Yep.
Committee will stay on the deed. Committee will come back to order. Representative Carney, would you mind withdrawing your motion? And we'll hold this bill as we proceed on with the next one. Motion has been withdrawn to move the, bill. The Resources Committee will take up House Bill 400 at this time. An act relating to maximum length of salmon seine vessels providing for an effective date. Representative Haugen, would you please address this? Get order in the committee if you get on top of that, please.
Do you want me to repeat everything I said once already?
Is...
Okay, I understand that...
No, I don't, you don't need to do that.
I understand that there is a problem as far as one of your members are concerned. We're willing to have you write a committee substitute that will apply only southeast from Alaska, probably from Yakutat to Cape Fox or something like that.
Somebody had that prepared?
Yes, it's in there.
Well...
We're all set on that, are you?
You have it, you're all set for it, I think, go ahead and read it.
Is there any other copy of it?
I don't...
Yeah, you got it there, it's in Cape Fairweather.
Cape Fairweather to, and south.
What did you say, the Congress of National Forests?
Well, on that basis, it's acceptable to me, and I've had a lot of pressure, a lot of concern about this from all the three major vessel owners association in southeast, and they would like to see the bill come out and be enacted in order that they know what's going to happen for the next season.
Are there questions from committee members on the committee substitute? We'll accept a motion to adopt the committee substitute.
So move, Mr. Chairman.
Is there objection?
Mr. Chairman, I don't object. However, I asked about an effective date on the bill. Should we put it in before we accept the committee substitute?
We're on the 50-foot limit now.
All right. I remove my objection.
Is there a, what is...
Without objection, the committee substitute is immediately effective.
That's fine. Thank you.
Committee substitute has been adopted. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for House Bill 400 Resources.
I'd like to ask Ken Fish and Gingrich if he would, Ken Parker, if we'd so I object for the purpose of asking Fish and Game their opinion on this bill.
Ken, would you like to join us at the table and state your name for the record, please, and make any comments to Jack?
Yes, I'm Ken Parker, Deputy Director of Commercial Fisheries Division, and we have no opposition to the bill, and we provided the current language that's being proposed here in your amendment. I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Anybody have any questions in the department?
Call for the question, Mr. Chairman.
Everyone, my objection.
I have a question. What? There's no objection to extending it by 8 feet?
Just to take the 58-foot limit off and leave it open to any size boat from a skiff to one of the ferries if you want to go that far. Really, all it is to get more use. Most of the boats today can't make it on one single fishery. For instance, a halibut boat that's over 58 feet long can't fish salmon because of that restriction. And it's another form of limited entry. This is universally agreed amongst the boat owners to lift that. At one time, it was used to restrict it. It was a form of limited entry. It's gone beyond its usefulness, and at the present time, it's a hindrance to the fishermen in southeast that have bought bigger boats and are restricted to one fishery. It would help put a boat on the basis of being able to fish more than one fishing season. They could fish the year around on the basis of this.
Yeah.
We talked to Texan today about it. The 50-foot official Coast Guard register length vessel is part of, it shall not be longer than 58 feet or greater than 50-foot keel length. They say that they go by, they don't even go by the keel length and 50-foot length, they go by the overall length because it's impossible. But this is appropriate to put this in at 50 foot.
That's correct. The overall length is much easier to enforce than the registered length. You can extend a vessel beyond the registered length by just tacking on a bow, artificial bow, or stern. I might add that the department feels that we can provide for the conservation of fisheries through control of gear lengths and fishing time, so the size of the vessel doesn't really impact our ability to manage.
I point out too now, Ernie, that the Board of Fisheries will still have to approve it by regulation, so our taking it off the statutes, if it gets through the House, through the legislative process, still going to have to go through the Board of Fisheries, so you'll have to convince them as well. Am I correct here? We have no choice. I mean, so it's
okay.
Representative Barnes?
I think there's something wrong with what he just said. I wanted to run something by you. We promulgate the laws, and the Board of Fisheries promulgate regulations to carry out the laws that we pass. So if we pass a law that says this is what it's going to be, the Board of Fisheries have no choice but to go along with it other than to adopt the regulations to carry out the intent of the chapter.
And would you care to comment on that?
Well, yes, Mr. Chairman, the Board of Fisheries establishes restrictions on, has the authority to establish restrictions on vessel length relative to providing adequate protection to the resource. If they, in their opinion, from the testimony they received, felt that the larger vessel equated to dramatic increases in fleet capacity and therefore jeopardize our ability to obtain escapements, then they could enact that type of a regulation.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you. Well, I disagree with that. I agree that they have the authority to promulgate the regulations to preserve the resources. But if we say you can have a 58-foot boat, then you can have a 58-foot boat, and they can promulgate the regulations to limit the season, the bag limit, and what have you. You disagree with that?
I'm not an expert on the authorities of the Board of Fisheries, but it's my understanding that they can enact a vessel size restriction, even though the legislature has not addressed that. An example is the Bristol Bay 32-foot drift gillnet vessel restriction that's currently in place.
I guess I would have trouble with the discussion here, too. I'm not sure where I fall down on it.
Mr. Chairman?
We have a legal person in the audience, and I don't know if he feels like addressing this, but it does seem to me if we pass a law that specifically states that there shall be an exception, that there would have to be that exception, and I would suspect that in the absence of a specific law that said there had to be an exception, then in fact the Board of Fisheries would have the authority to promulgate regulations governing size limitations all they wanted. But if we put specifically on the books that there shall be an exception, and that exception is that vessels taking salmon with salmon in southeastern water shall be allowed that, then I would suspect that the board would not have the leeway to adopt regulations in opposition to this. Just be my perception.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to associate myself with your remarks if you are correct.
Mr. Bradley, do you have any comment on that?
I just, I came in on this late. I assume that, that the problem that you're talking about is that you've got two laws authorizing the board to adopt regulations regarding land, and you're only changing one of them. That must be the situation that the gentleman was talking about.
Well, we have an overall law that says the Board of Fisheries can adopt gear limitations for fisheries. We have another law that says a limitation of 50 feet on official Coast Guard register should be on all vessels, and we're now making that second law to read except in Southeast Alaska, and I would thereby state that, anyway.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to come back and explain this. I may well be off base. So.
It was my feeling that by removing this statute or exempting Southeast, it would, my position was it would allow Fish and Game to make the regulatory changes if they saw them necessary. I am not under the assumption that this needs to be done, but I'm also that I am not a professional and I cannot make that judgment, and I put it into the hands of the Board of Fisheries who are in the business of making that regulatory decision. So I had assumed that we were just taking it off the state's requirement that it shall not be greater than 58 feet.
I would comment that it's my perception that that's not what we're doing. If you want what you're stating, then it seems to me that we can't have a statute that says a specific area shall be allowed to have vessels of any length, which is what we've got in Southeast. And if you wanted even in Southeast Alaska to be up to the board's prerogative, I don't think this accomplished your goal. I think this accomplished the goals that Ernie wants, and that is that there's not a limitation in Southeast Alaska on vessels. But I think by placing it very specifically in law, it would just be my opinion that they could not promulgate a regulation contrary to this law. Further questions, committee members?
You open for the motion? Or did I already make it?
Mm-hmm.
I call for the question
and
a motion.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative.
I remove my objection.
Are there further objections to the motion to move the committee substitute for House Bill 400 out of the Resources Committee? Hearing no further objections, 400 is passed out with individual recommendations. Thank you, Ernie.
Bye, Ernie.
The committee will bring back before it discussion on House Bill 811. Representative Halpern.
Mr. Chairman, the problem that I had was one of the preference rights is granted by a private corporation. Basically, preference rights are something that I've proposed in this committee for the last 4 years. Unless they're based on a legal entry. These were legal entries, but if you apply it into the future, you could have a situation where a corporation holding a timber sale contract could allow somebody to build on it, possibly for some other consideration, and in doing so, be granting a preference to future disposal of state land outside of the legislative process and outside, I think, the intent of this legislation. I think that would be covered if we put a sunset on entry under that provision. So that if someone entered after a given date, that preference is not granted. And still take care of the problems trying to be addressed by the legislators.
What did you, you have some specific language, could you read that so I didn't understand why you said that? Representative Barnes.
Mr. Chairman, I disagree with my colleague across the table. This doesn't relate to the state land that is, this land is the United States Forest Service land that has been specifically let by contract to certain landowners or landholders for the purpose of cutting timber. And you would have to have, it would seem to me, for this law to relate, and I believe that we get testimony if this only relates to two particular forests, the Chugach and the Saugus, and that the only way that I guess we came into play was if the state selected this particular land, and I don't see you, Representative Halpern, what you see in this language.
Okay, what the language could...
Representative Halpern.
What the language could do is, in a timber sale contract on another piece of land that might be selected for disposal, could grant the same preference in the future. For example, a timber contractor goes out there and he's running his operation, they're gonna shut it down. It's possible that somebody could gain a preference by making a deal with the timber contractor and going ahead and moving on there specifically to get that preference. And have a preference because the state has selected it, and when the contract runs out, the state selection is gonna become effective. And they've utilized the system in a way that it wasn't intended to give a preference right to the disposal of that land should it ever be offered. Once you grant a preference right, whether it's offered or not, if it becomes state land, the guy that's on it's pretty safe.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question to, what's his name?
Mark.
Mark. Mark, presently we have two forests that this applies to, is that correct?
That's Congress and Chugach.
And that being the case, and this only applies to the limited amount of the land that has been selected by the state in those two forests, is it not?
Mark, would you state your name for the record, please, before we continue the question?
I'm Mark Widow, Department of Natural Resources. It wouldn't apply to a lot of land in terms of thousands of acres. The state has made selections also at Whale Pass where there's a logging camp, and it's...
Is that a national forest?
Yes.
A Forest Service?
And we have several thousand more acres of selections in the national forest that we're likely to make around logging camps if people want to settle there. There are two criteria for settling land in national forest, for picking state land, future state selections in national forests. One is future settlement land, and two is recreation land. So it's, there would be land coming under this law in the future, it's possible.
If
I may continue, Mr. Chairman. But this bill specifically relates to prior land that has been held for logging purposes, did it not? So you would have to have had the, whatever you call them, not being a timber person, I have trouble coming up with some of these terms.
Timber sale contract.
Yeah, timber sale contracts, thanks. So for this bill to come into play, there would have had to be in prior timber sale contracts under the Forest Service, is that not true? Okay. So all of those lands that the state might select for recreational or home site entry purchases would not necessarily come under this law, is that not true?
That's correct. The timber sale contracts cover a pretty sizable area because they're 100-year contracts.
Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, you know, I expressed concern here at our last meeting about, you know, the fact that we should provide, this legislation should cover statewide, be a statewide scope. But in this case, this legislation does not have statewide scope. It has for just one specific instance. And so I think we're going to have to come back at a later date and address the problem of the concept of preference rights. And I think that sunset provision is recommended by Representative Halpern of this bill, and go ahead and pass it and settle this problem today, and then get into the struggles about the whole statewide concerns at a later time would be a better way to go. So,
okay, I think I understand that. I don't agree with, don't move yet.
Why not? We're going to debate.
Huh?
We can debate it.
Well, I think he wants to do something, but before you came in, we had some testimony on this and asked specifically, and it at least appeared to me, that this legislation does, in fact, apply on a broad scale, not just to Thorn Bay, that it applies to any situation in a national forest in Alaska. Obviously, it doesn't apply to anything that's not in a national forest, but it does apply anywhere in Alaska in a national forest.
My motion is going to be a sunset.
Okay, well, I don't know if Representative Halpern.
Just the point with regard to what Ramona said, I guess you said Whale Bay. Okay, if there's a mining or timber operation at Whale Bay,
Whale Pass,
wherever it is, and I wanted some land at Whale Pass and knew the state had selection interest in that area, I could go to the timber contractor and say, either go to work for him or make some arrangement to build a house there. Build the house there starting next month. And out of this legislation, get a preference for a land disposal coming maybe 2 years hence on the choicest piece of ground in that particular bay. And that's what I object to, is using it forward. I don't object to dealing with a problem that's a past problem. But I think it's hard enough to be fair in the land disposal program as it is. And to allow somebody to abuse an exemption that's created for the problem, I think it's a mistake. That's where I have the problem.
I'd like to just respond to that, and I'm not sure how this applies. That situation exists today. There are only two lodges and three bars in Yakutat, Alaska. One of them, specifically the best one and the biggest one, and the most popular one, is in fact built on a campsite of a timber company. And the reason the way it was obtained was that the man put in for a timber sale contract. Got a timber sale contract, immediately built a bunkhouse. The bunkhouse turned into a pretty nice resort and lodge. And through a combination of state selection of that property and the preference right that he already had through the Forest Service, it is now a functioning private entity. You object to that, and I can see your concern for abuse. But I would submit in that specific instance, that's the only way that anybody will ever get any private property in Yakutat, Alaska. And I think that was probably a very good deal. The only other property there is 100% municipality. The state cannot give any land, and has not given any land, except it's controlled by the municipality and the state airport, and they lease that only. So I guess I would, for a different reason, along with Representative Barnes, object to your to sunsetting, because I think that I don't think that it creates an abuse. I think that it creates a situation where a person could, in fact, establish something that otherwise might not be established. I would also point out that the bill, to my dismay, does not ensure that there will ever be any sale of any land. And that was a change that was made yesterday. Apparently, the major people involved in this have decided that that's the policy decision they want to go, and so at least that to me does not satisfy one of the concerns that Thorn Bay residents indicated to us. Was a prime concern to them is that they wanted title to their property. This bill does not assure that. I know that the intentions of DNR in that specific instance are in fact that they will have a disposal there, and that then this preference right would kick into place and they would get the title. But the bill does not ensure that they ever sell land.
Yeah, real quickly, I mean, the point is that we've got a problem at Thorn Bay. I mean, let's do something that takes care of Thorn Bay, make sure that it gets through the process. I mean, the worst thing that can happen is that the bill dies and Thorn Bay, does not get accomplished what it wants. So, I mean, I think we ought to do whatever is necessary to make sure that the thing accomplishes Thorn Bay's problem.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Who undid that very good bill we had before?
Representative Barnes, the folks from Thorn Bay and DNR and the legislative sponsors, Representative Freeman and Representative Gardner, worked to satisfy the concerns of members of this committee, and I think that they pretty well did that. It's obvious that they didn't take care of all of them. That one being one, but I think they have a consensus, and had they not have done that, then Representative Carney and perhaps Halpern.
Well, they didn't take into consideration my consensus.
They did take into consideration many of your consensus points, including the removal of the recreational language and so forth. Yeah. Representative Carney?
Well, I must have a different bill than you do, because the way I'm reading this, they do end up buying it. That the purchase price offered to the auction shall be an amount determined by the commissioner. I don't understand why you're saying that it won't be sold to.
It doesn't require sale.
Doesn't require sale.
It doesn't require selection.
It says if the state offers it, then all this other stuff happens.
Okay.
selection is already a fact, right?
Well, in this case it is.
The state selection is a fact, but the fact that the state disposed of it in the land is not a fact.
Not a fact, okay.
It's my understanding it's DNR's intent, but it... are there any other comments of committee members? Are there any suggested amendments to the legislation by committee members? Representative Halpern?
I would move to add a section, it's a conceptual amendment that can be drafted and checked out by the committee, but that would make this bill apply to existing improvements at the time of the, at the time the bill passes, basically.
Let me do it.
Immediate effective date.
Immediate effective.
Well, then, that would, in fact, then, Representative Carney, be a legislation designed solely for one place, that's what you're suggesting.
I don't know. You know, it may not be selected yet, but if the improvement is there, if they're in the situation, they've basically made their improvements in good faith based on an entry that was an entry that worked for a timber company. It wasn't something that was done specifically to gain a preference in land disposal. They get it. You know, I'd like to dispose of all that land, or a lot of that land, too, but...
There's a conceptual amendment before the committee to limit the legislation to apply to land underneath facilities which are existing as of the date of the passage of the Act.
And add an immediate effective date.
And adding an immediate effective date to the legislation. Those can easily be separate amendments. Is there objection to the amendment?
Yes.
There is objection. I would ask before we vote, just from the legislative drafter, if that conceptual amendment is possible to put into words. Not that you do it now, but can we do that?
To make the bill apply only to existing improvements?
Yes.
Well, what I would do to achieve that, I think, is make temporary law, unless you wanted to apply to situations outside of Thorn Bay.
Well, I don't care if it applies to situations outside of Thorn Bay that are existing situations. Because if the improvement exists on the date of the legislation's passage or before, and it's in a different timber sale area, it's in a different location, which is subsequently selected by the state, then I have I would like it to apply. I think it's a good law in that case.
But those situations have to be in fact as of the effective date of the bill.
Right.
That could be conceptually done.
Easily.
It could easily be conceptually done. There is objection to the amendment. Is there further discussion? Those in favor? Those opposed? Legislation or the amendment passes. The conceptual amendment passes.
Mr. Chairman, I moved them both together.
Yeah, the amendment that passed included a conceptual amendment relating to existing permanent structures and also to an immediate, to the inclusion of an immediate effective date clause in the bill. Committee staff, could you give us something to sign? Representative Halpern has moved the bill. Is there objection? Hearing none, House Bill 811 is passed by a reversal.